are you? Okay. Is WIPA organizations or events part of AA or not? If they are not a regular meeting on our meeting schedules, are they part of AA? And we have a group that's registered as young people. Can the WIPA events register with GSO also? Can you tear that apart and address it? You have a long walk to the mic.
Oh, Riley, give me a hug. You are just the best. Thank you for letting me go first. I just want to, again, last year was my first time being on the stage. This year will be my last. And, not last, but I mean as a delegate, I'm sorry. And I just want to take a moment really quick to just thank each and every single one of you guys for not only your commitment, but your service, your dedication, your love to Alcoholics Anonymous, and for the amount of things that you guys are giving up to serve Alcoholics Anonymous and each and every one of you guys out there as well. So I am an alcoholic, and my name is Alex Wheatley, and I have the honor and privilege of serving Mid-Southern California Area 09 as their Panel 74 delegate. And not sure why I got this question. I'm just kidding, Riley. But the question reads, is WIPA, and for those that might not know that acronym, it's Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous. So I think I should just stop there. But we'll keep going for the sake of the question. Organizations/events. So there's Mikipa, Hikipa. I think that's Hawaii, but I'm not sure. Akipa, which is All Alcoholics Anonymous Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous. That will be in Los Angeles in 2026. WACIPA, which is the Western Area, California Young People and AA, et cetera, part of AA or not. I believe Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous says it for itself. Say no more. If they are not a regular meeting or something meeting scheduled, we have a group that is registered as young people. Can the WIPA events register with GSO also? WIPA events, I'm not sure, but as far as registering with Fellowship Connection, the AA group pamphlet talks about that specifically under specialty meetings. And as long as young people and Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, groups, events continue to not allow or continue to welcome anyone and everyone that is looking for a way out, and they continue to carry the message to anyone that walks into their doors, well, I invite you to attend one for yourself so that you can have that experience, because absolutely 1,000% they are part of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you for allowing me to answer this question.
Thank you. This question is for Matthew. As a DCM, you could save the long walk until you hear the question. I'll let you do that. Yeah, okay, so you get the question read, and then you can do the long walk. You know, I'm being good. I'm being really good to you. Okay. As a DCM, how do I establish boundaries from my home group, requests from my service sponsors, and recommendations in my obligation to the district when they are in conflict?
I'm Matthew, alcoholic. I get to serve California Northern Interior as their Panel 74 delegate. Thank you for the question. I'm going to read it again. As a DCM, how do I establish boundaries from my home group request, my service sponsor recommendations, and my obligation to the district when they are in conflict. I can only speak from experience. You know, not only do I have a service sponsor, but I have a recovery sponsor. And between the two of them, if I don't get the answer that I want to hear, I talk to other alcoholics and I pray about it. And you know, the answer will come. Consult widely. You know, and when there is a conflict, I think the less I say, the better. And to be, if I have to say something, I am the voice of reason. And then I can listen and hear what's really going on. Understanding my part as a DCM, I remember I always wanted to steer the conversation and I wanted everybody to know what was going on. But really my job was to be the traffic cop. I was just the one that ran the meeting. And I understand that there's always conflict. We can't always all get along. Oh, look at there. But I think that, you know, after many business meetings, I think God is in the room when two or more are gathered. And we can trust the group's conscience. And we do have those traditions. You know, we have the right to be wrong. So whatever the outcome, we can agree to disagree. And we can hug each other in the parking lot when we leave. Thank you.
Next is Rudy. Hold on. And this is in Spanish, so no, you're out of luck there. But I did get it interpreted, so or translated. So it's why are elected? Why? Maybe you better read this in Spanish. And we'll give you an extra 30 seconds.
Hello, everyone. My name is Rudy Mejia. I am an alcoholic. Central California, Area 93. Says, when we elect a service position, especially a GSR, hold on, let me read in Spanish first. Cuando se elige un alterno de un servicio, especialmente RSG, se elige pensando en que será el siguiente RSG o nada más por cubrir el servicio. Basically, what they're asking is, when you elect an alternate GSR, and this can also be an alternate DCM or an alternate delegate, do we do it because we think he's going to be the next, going to take the next position? You know where the question is going, right? In this case, he's asking for a GSR. If I would believe that because I'm an alternate GSR, I already think I'm going to be the next GSR, right? And I got to tell you this, based on my experience, it happened to me. Two panels ago, I was the alternate delegate with Alex. Kate was there too. That's why now I'm at panel 75. And sometimes we make a lot of mistakes. We forget about living one day at a time. And I'm gonna tell you this, and I'm not afraid of saying it. I was so wrong thinking that because I was an alternate delegate, I knew I had a big chance to be the next delegate. Guess what happened to the whole panel, guys? I was so worried about what's gonna happen at Plaza if they ask me a question and I don't know what to say. And I was the whole panel thinking about it. I used to talk to my friend from Area 9. Hey, listen, what can I say if they ask me this? Listen, it never happened. I was so worried for 2 years, and I never was a delegate. Being an alternate doesn't mean you're going to be the next one. No. People are looking at you. They see your behavior. They see the way you're doing your service. Do not feel because you're an alternate, you will be the next. It doesn't happen like that. Your area is looking at you. And at elections, you're going to see it. I've been in elections where you go to the hat, and that's God is in control, guys. So thank you for the question.
Oh my God, that was good.
These guys are wonderful. The next question is for Penny. All right. After a 2-year pilot program, our area has voted to discontinue hybrid assemblies. Now our assemblies are in person only. Either way, it's difficult to have widespread representation at our assemblies. So here's a question. What do you see as the strengths and weaknesses of hybrid assemblies? Has your area dealt with this issue? And if so, how?
I don't know anything about hybrid. I'm totally kidding. Thank you for the question. My name is Penny and I'm an alcoholic. I am your panel 74 delegate and with Oregon Area 58. Woohoo! Currently serving on the agenda committee. So I'm going to reread the question. Don't start that yet. I got to breathe. After a 2-year pilot program, our area has voted to discontinue hybrid assemblies. Now our assemblies are in person only. Either way, it is difficult to have widespread representation at our assemblies. What do you see as the strengths and weaknesses of hybrid assemblies? Has your area dealt with this issue? And if so, how? So I'm going to answer the first part of the question is, what do you see as the strengths and weaknesses of hybrid assemblies? Obviously, when we were in the pandemic, it kind of forced a lot of us to go Zoom-wise and go virtual. I don't like to use the Zoom platform as far as saying that. But anyways, so our area started looking at hybrid. And we failed our way to success. I mean, we had an ad hoc committee, we had an amazing IT, we had a chair that was leading it who was amazing, who is amazing, not was. The strengths and the weaknesses, I mean, I think there's strengths in all of it because the people that can't or do not wish to attend in person have the choice. Or have the ability to sign on and be able to view the assemblies, whatever is happening virtual. I don't know that I would label it a weakness. I would label it as a strength because I always love having options. And as a delegate, my option is to be there in person, and that's okay too. Has our area dealt with this issue of strengths and weaknesses? Again, I don't want to label it as a weakness. I don't want to label it as a weakness because I think it's a strength when you did the pilot program, you tried it out, and if your area is suffering, my suggestion would be go out, just like when I was a GSR or a DCM, is I went out and I recruited. It's like, what can I do to get people involved and to show up and be available for service? Thank you for the question.
All right, where's Drew? Where's Drew? Oh, sorry. Okay, this question is for Drew. Is it a good idea to have more than one service position at a time?
Thank you, Riley. I thought I could get away with not answering a question by sitting behind the Pacific Region delegates, but apparently that doesn't work. So my name is Drew, I'm an alcoholic, and I have the privilege and honor to serve the BC-Yukon Area 79 as their panel 75 delegate. And this question asks me, is it a good idea to have more than one service position at a time? Well, in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was taught that if I have a good idea, I should probably share it. And I should probably share that good idea with someone who has a bit of experience, like a sponsor or a service sponsor, to get some feedback about my good idea. Because often my good ideas might not be the best idea. And so I've learned in service to consult widely. And I will tell you, in my experience, I haven't held two general service positions at a time. I have stayed active in my home group. I think it's vital that I am an AA member first. I serve my area, but I still go to my home group, welcome folks, make coffee, set up chairs, although we're in a church, so you can't really set up a pew. But in that regard, I hold more than one position, but I'm also not going to my district table and participating in discussions. That's for the district committee to decide what they're going to do in the district. And I do have a vote as well in my home group. If I choose to use it, that's my choice. I may not, as a delegate, decide to use my vote. So in terms of two positions, I've been taught it's not recommended I hold more than one position. I just, you know, let other people participate. Let us use each other's talents to bring into Alcoholics Anonymous and share the wealth of service. Because I don't know about you, but for me, service has been experiential. And I've had people explain service to me and how great it is. And I didn't understand the benefits of service until I got to participate and be a member here and know what I belong to. And if I'm holding more than one position, I might be robbing somebody else of that opportunity. So that's what I learned when I consult widely. And thank you for inviting your Canadian neighbor to the south today. I'm not going to get a chance to say that again. But to the south, to participate here at PRASA this week, and it's been a great, great experience. Thank you.
Thank you. Lisa. Okay. Oh, you got a long walk. That's good. How can I help members in my community understand the difference between an AA meeting and an AA group? What is the difference?
Good morning, everyone. My name is Lisa, and I'm an alcoholic. Big difference from last year, huh? I was the crying, babbling idiot up here having the mass anxiety attack. Growth in service, it works, trust me. You get more comfortable and more secure as you get closer to the end of your rotation, definitely. All right, Lisa, alcoholic. Thank you for the question. This is a great question. And actually really kind of pertains to a couple groups I have in my hometown. So here's the question. How can I help members in my community understand the difference between an AA meeting and an AA group? What is the difference? It's funny. I'm going to share a little bit of my experience. So in my small town of Libby, Montana, we have a couple groups. We have a couple meetings, let's put it that way, that will not register with GSO because they want the autonomy to do whatever they want. They don't want to follow AA traditions. So they are not a registered group, but they do meet. I refer to that as a meeting. If you would like to be a group, you really should have a group service number and a general service representative that represents your voice. Because if you don't participate as a group, and I say this to a lot of mine, I had a guy call me up about the plain language big book, you know, complaining that we'd passed it. I'm like, well, where have you been for the last 8 years? Because you haven't been participating, right? And so that's the difference for me between a group and a meeting. A meeting is registered with GSO. They hold monthly business meetings. They have a GSR. They participate in their district. They participate in their area. A meeting is two people with a book and a coffee pot that are still trying to figure out how to stay sober. That's just my opinion. It could be wrong. It could be right. I'll let you decide. Thanks for the question.
Okay. Got another Spanish question here for Blas. Where's Blas? Okay. Don't know what it says, but it was translated to, can a meeting be held at a church or treatment facility, and what are the requirements?
I'll let you reread it in English and Spanish before I start you.
30 seconds after.
Hi, everyone. My name is Blas, and I am an alcoholic. It's my honor to serve Area 03, which is Arizona. I serve in the literature committee, and I am on panel 74. And I was looking at most of the members that were leaving, so I thought it was going to be kind of small group, so that way we're not going to be too nervous over here. And then they said, maybe they're going to leave. And they say, you know, let's not do it. But thank you for staying late, and thank you for staying. And, you know, that's kind of challenges for us, too. You know, they say the delegates should be the sharp members in AA, you know, because we're delegates. But no, we are nervous. We all are kind of shaking and all that, but it's part of the show. Thank you for the question. I was reading it backwards, so let me see. They suggest that we read in Spanish first. ¿Puede un grupo seccionar en una iglesia o centro de tratamiento? Si puede, y si puede, ¿cuáles son los requisitos? Can a meeting be held at a church or treatment facility? And what are the requirements? You know, through the year we have experience, and we pretty much of us seen the different, we've been in different places and all different groups. And now, can we meet in a church? When one or two members get together with the requirement to stay sober, we can call it a group. Right? It doesn't matter where they meet, as long as they don't affiliate with some other entities. So any group is autonomous, and they can meet any places. Now, the requirements all depends on the requirements. I kind of think in that this way of the question coming to the requirements for the facility, for the site. I think this is, question, the facility or site is that's the one is going to put the requirements. And when we are looking for a place to meet, we are looking some for church or any kind of facility, and that fails our requirement, why not do it there? When I just came to AA, we used to think we cannot meet in churches because we cannot be affiliate to a church. I know we're not And but like I said, they we meet the place meet the requirements. I mean, we can meet over there and go, because see, Spanish community does meetings different than English speaking meetings. I know you most of you don't know, but we rent a space for a lot of money, and we meet only once a day, and the rest of the time is empty. Thank you.
Okay, Courtney's next. All right, you ready? Now this one is directed to Courtney, so I don't know if this is if you've already planned this, you're going to avow any relationship to this. Okay, so here it is. If GSO needs more consistent contributions and it costs over $550 or whatever it costs for office staff to open envelopes versus under $3 to process online payments, might you help us understand why e-payment options isn't being pushed out to the fellowship on every level? How can we help?
All right, hi, my name's Courtney, I'm an alcoholic. Hey, grateful to be serving Western Washington, Area 72 as your delegate. There's some out here too. I love you guys. Thanks to the host committee. This has been an amazing experience. Thank you, Area 02 Alaska. Yes, can we, and all the volunteers. They had volunteers from every area show up. And it takes a village to do this. And I know we're gonna learn that in 2027 when we host in Seattle. So the question is, if GSO needs more consistent contributions and it costs over $550 for office staff to open envelopes, et cetera, versus under $3 to process online payments, might you help us understand why e-payment options isn't being pushed to the fellowship on every level? How can we help? I'm also going to try and decipher whose handwriting this is. Is it from someone in Area 72? All right. When you say e-payments, I'm thinking you mean online contributions, I'm guessing. And I do think it is talked about. I think it comes out through some of the box 459. That one. You know when you're up front and your mind goes blank? That's what we got going on. I do think it is talked about. I also don't think we can force groups to contribute in a certain way. Some groups don't have bank accounts and cannot make online contributions. I think some people may not have one for themselves and they mail in cash. So I don't think we can kind of dictate. I think awareness is definitely helpful. And that's one thing I mentioned yesterday when I was speaking around what can our groups do to help support the General Service Board? And I think talk about it at your home group. I think some people just aren't aware of the cost associated. I know I wasn't. I was like, oh, talk to the home group, and now we make online payments. So some of it is awareness, and it's our responsibility to make folks aware, make our sponsors, our sponsees, our home groups, our areas aware, because I think in the end it is our responsibility as members and fellows to do so. So I think GSO, everybody can continue to have the conversation, but I think we also need to take responsibility to do so. Thanks.
Okay. All right, Mike's up next. Where are you? Oh, right next to me. You have a short walk. Okay. What can I say to the new members or young members with problems with alcohol and drugs?
First, I'd like to say, isn't Riley ravishing this morning? As an AE member for just a second, my sobriety date is March 10th, 1999. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to wake up tomorrow with one more day and do God's work. I owe that to you. Thank you for the question. My name is Mike and I'm an alcoholic. I have the honor to serve Area 69 as their Panel 75 delegate. The question, what can I say to the new member, to the new members, young members with problems with alcohol and drugs? I can tell them my experience. This is me. This was who I was when I got here. And the answer was love. Nobody told me that I couldn't announce myself as an alcoholic and addict. I learned that. As a DCM, an early DCM, the conference theme the next year was our singleness of purpose. And I had a talk with God, and I learned. That's my experience. They loved me. Alcoholics Anonymous loved me until I identified as what my root problem was. That's all I have, is my experience, and that love is always the answer. Thanks.
All right, Deborah, where are you? Okay. And for Deborah, how do online AA groups contribute financially?
Thank you so much. Aloha, my name is Deborah. I'm an alcoholic. I'm honored to serve Area 17 Hawaii. Delegate, Panel 75, serving on the Finance Committee to the conference. And thank you for the question. Could you pass me my glasses? Sorry. Glasses are helpful. Sorry. How do online AA groups contribute financially? One, online groups can contribute to your district, your area, to GSO by sending in your monies directly to them, snail mail. That's one, because you could do it. Or online, if you have the capability of transmitting money from your account to their account in any, you know, group, a district, area, and GSO. I'm in Hawaii. It is through our experience that a group online, by the way, my home group is TYG Online, District 4, Windward, Oahu, and we contribute online. We are an online group, but we send a physical check to area, we send the physical check to GSO, and we send the physical check to Oahu Intergroup. So you have options. You can do one or both. We found that through our experience, and I want to thank our past delegate, Tommy G, who made us very aware, as well as our past treasurer, our past website. He was our treasurer, became our website master, and made those things available. And it's only available if you make your area, your group, your district aware of their of these opportunities on how to contribute. And it starts with aware education. We don't know unless you tell us. And of course, there's that we won't know unless we ask. So you can do it online, just like I believe the last question was Courtney answered, and or physically. They both work. And thank you for your contributions.
YMCA. I heard the music YMCA, so I was just trying to do it. I thought that was for me. No.
Okay, are you ready for Cade?
Okay. Get it!
All right. Is it possible to have a pamphlet or card or something to address the overall issue that our common problem and common solution is the basis of our fellowship, and the importance of leaving outside issues such as politics at the door?
Stretch.
At some point, you actually
have to. At some point. I'm a procrastinator sometimes, so. Thank you so much for the question. My name is Cade, I'm an alcoholic. And it is truly a pleasure to be here. I wanna say thank you to the panel 74s that have been so amazing in this journey, and the panel 75s, welcome. Strap on, it's gonna be an amazing ride at this. Strap in, right? The panel 73s for not throwing me out. Oh my goodness, my sponsor for opening the door every Tuesday morning with a cup of coffee. That's the last time. We're gonna have something to talk about this week. Oh my goodness. Wow, I love you guys, and thank you for loving me until I can love myself. And whoever this was, thank you so much for this question. I'm gonna do my best. So I'm gonna read this one more time. It says, is it possible to have a pamphlet or card or something to address the overall issue that our common problem and common solution is the basis of our fellowship, and the importance of leaving outside issues such as politics at the door? Thank you. Well, thank you. So, I think it's extremely important to make sure that Alcoholics Anonymous is alive and well, and the message is on point, right? Because it was on point when I got here, and I really feel like it needs to be on point for the next generation and the alcoholic who's still suffering that's down the street, right? It's absolutely heartbreaking to to walk down and go have dinner, and we're sitting there and looking outside and just seeing alcohol just running rampant and the people that are suffering and dying today. And so I think that politics, I think that religion, I think all of that stuff needs to stay at the door. Our common problem, right? I look for the similarities, not the differences, right? And I think that's where the magic is. That's where the magic happens, is when two alcoholics are sitting down talking to each other, and then being able to get to see the light come on and the sunlight of the Spirit come through. But when you start mixing in politics or religion, then there's a separation. And I'm the youngest of five, and when you throw a little drama or you put something, a divider in there, it gets pretty wild, right? And so, and I think that is extremely dangerous when it comes to Alcoholics Anonymous, because this is a deadly disease. My brother died at the age of 52 from an esophageal hemorrhage from drinking too much. And just because I got sober, right, and showed him the way for 19 years didn't mean that the power of alcohol isn't deadly. So I think it is imperative that we stick to our common bond and the solution. And if I'm solution-based, right, and it's what can I do for the suffering alcoholic? Can I suit up? Can I show up? And can I get a red light? Woo! Love you guys.
Okay, Chitra, it's your turn. All right. Are we forgetting our primary purpose and relying on newer literature instead of carrying the message individually to the still suffering alcoholic? Are we losing our message trying to be all things to all people?
Hi everyone, my name is Chitra and I'm an alcoholic. And I love California Northern Coastal Area and all the people who taught me, because we know nothing, but they know everything. The question is, are we forgetting our primary purpose and relying on newer literature instead of carrying the message individually to the still suffering alcoholic? Are we losing our message and trying to be all things to all people? Okay, so first it says, are we forgetting our primary purpose? So what is our primary purpose? Our primary purpose is to carry the message to the still suffering alcoholic. And then it says, and relying on newer literature instead of carrying the message individually. So my understanding of the plain language big book is that I got one and then I read it with someone else who hasn't read it, and that is carrying the message individually. So I don't think that it's an instead. I think the newer literature is carrying the message individually. Are we losing the message to be all things to all people? I feel like that's a cop-out for accessibility issues. Like, we can't please them all, so we're not going to try. It's like, no, that's not what it is. We have to say, where are we missing the point? How can we do better? And also, the people trying can be in fear and not know how to do it and know it costs too much money and that we don't want to, because the people asking the questions are not the people doing the work. But we do it anyway and we figure it out and we ask for help. So I would say we're not forgetting our primary purpose.
Thank you. Okay, Richard. Richard, you're up. This is another Spanish question. Why newcomers don't stay more than 2 months in the linguistic groups? And why are most of linguistic groups almost empty?
Richard Ortega, alcoholic. Love you guys. Love you all. Panel 74, delegate for Area 08, that's San Diego and Imperial. And thank you everybody for being here and holding on with us. Why newcomers don't stay more than 2 months in the linguistic groups? As a personal opinion, and what I've seen within, we have 47 Spanish-speaking groups in our area. We could use a bit more help with our step work. And a lot of the times, and barely yesterday at one of our tables, we were discussing that, or talking about it, there's a lot of focus on just open sharing rather than our recovery program and or our principles, 36 principles. And that would definitely help our linguistic or Spanish-speaking Hispanic membership to stick on with the program and get going with the program. A lot of the times what I've seen in my home group, and we're really close to our court right there in the city of El Cajon, we get sent a lot of people and they seem to get bored and tired of just listening, and then they disappear. Why are most of the linguistic groups almost empty? So
There seems to be a lot of other self-helping programs where a lot of the membership has dispersed, and they're looking for their self-help in another program or way of recovery. There's also sometimes anarchy system because of the, what is it, the elders, the bleeding deacons, right? Bloody deacons in the groups. And so the anarchy system at times does seem to push some of the membership away and find another meeting, another group to attend. But other than that, having book study meetings, I've noticed, or I've attended, are very helpful for the membership in the linguistic community to stay with the program. Thank you very much for the question.
Nikki, what? All right. It's coming. Why haven't the panel topics covered the agenda topics that will be discussed at the General Service Conference this year?
Good morning, everyone. I'm Nikki, and I come from the very best area, Southern California, Area 5. Okay. And thank you for the question. And I don't know the answer. I suspect that the program was being prepared prior to receiving all the agenda topics. I must say, though, that I thought that the various panels with their topics were wonderful. It was I really enjoyed, even though I did participate on one of the panels, but I really enjoyed the panels this year, and I loved how the topics kind of cohesively came together. So, yes, it's really nice when they do coincide with the General Service agenda, but I think that this proves to the point that it doesn't have to, and we can still have a wonderful PRASA. Thank you. Oh, and thank you for the question.
Okay, and so Lyle is up next. And so the question or questions are, why are there 22 trustees? Why is the 22nd trustee a class B? And will... It's always been Class A so far in the chair position, and we have 7 Class A's, are none of them qualified. So that's all pretty much one question.
Hello, everybody. My name's Lyle. I am an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. It's good to be here. I serve Area 42, that's Nevada, as our panel 75 delegate. So happy to be here. I serve on the trustees committee as well as the International Convention and Regional Forum Committee. So I'm going to be busy. So that's good. My mom warned me about being bad. I wouldn't listen. Okay, why are there 22 trustees? Am I the 22 trustees class B, your blah, first time? It's always been, well, you know, really, because they brought on Scott as a board member, board chair, right? And he is an alcoholic. So they redid the service manual to include 22 trustees. And so if you read your new service manual, it'll tell you that there are 22 trustees that are available for that now. That I was asked this question before, not today, but about a couple months ago. Someone asked me this, why this was, and I had to do some research, and I Googled it. Just kidding. Looked in a service manual, and in the new service manual, it's been updated to 22. So, is that it? That's it. Hey, thank you guys.
Okay, and now, Alaska's Joellen. If an area as a whole exceeds its prudent reserve, what should it do with the excess funds?
Hello, I'm Joellen, I'm an alcoholic. I'm also serving as Panel 74, Area 2 Delegate. And before I do this, I just want to say that I'm so completely delighted in the 74s and 75s, and we've come together, and I think there's been some really spontaneous team building, and I think that's gonna serve us well when we have all of your information and go to New York and do our work with input from you all. So I just really appreciate this group. Area 2, you just are so amazing, and I know there will be more applause for that later. So anyway, my question says, if an area as a whole exceeds its present reserve, its prudent reserve, what should it do with the excess funds? Well, there is no exact formula for, you know, or a mandate around when you have extra funds. But we are taught, and someone read it, I think yesterday, that the perilous wealth piece, I can't tell you where it is exactly, but it's the idea of holding on to too much money can cause problems. It's like we think it's mine, you know, and our area, I'll just speak to area two, with the pandemic, we had excess funds because we, and in Alaska, all the travel expenses weren't happening. So the amount of money we had got pretty hefty, and that caused some concern. And there was a little bit of a, like, should we hang on to it? The area committee, you know, should we maybe hang on to some because we don't know? You know, there's a lot of what ifs and we don't know, the future's uncertain. But there was a motion, in fact, I submitted the motion, and we cut a check for either $2,500 or $3,500 and sent it to the New York office. Because we really did have a lot of money, and we didn't know what was going to happen. And then after we all came together again, we still had all that money, and we'd been spending it down, and I was curious about other areas, and I found that a lot of the areas in this region had a similar experience. You know, there was just this chunk of money, and then it disappeared. The main thing is the education at the district level, the group level, the area level, that it can just lead to problems if we hang on to money. And like, what are we saving it for? And we had a really good discussion with Riley in her report yesterday about kind of the ups and downs. And area right now, which is really cool for me, and I talked to our finance people this weekend, is that we're looking at maybe not having enough money for some future travel, and we, you know, flying down to Juneau even. And we went, wait a minute, it always works out if we just trust in God and do the next right thing. It does just seem to take care of itself. So thank you.
Our amazing Pacific Regional delegates. I'd like to thank our reader and our timer, and thanks again to our Pacific Regional delegates at Panel 74 and 75.